Tonight we are doing week three with Peter. I think we decided to call the workshop Willingness.
Yes.
Week three of a four-week workshop. Mm-hmm. And Peter is a home group member here. So without further ado, I'm just going to give it to Peter.
All right. Thank you. My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic. So where we left off last time was the third step. The decision to turn our will and our lives over to a power greater than ourselves as we understood him, right? And just how do we do that is the rest of the steps tell me exactly how to do that. We left off right on the third step prayer. I think we hadn't read it yet, so just quickly I wanted to read it before I move on to the fourth step. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And I love this prayer. I say this prayer in my morning and nightly meditation or prayer meditation because I feel like I constantly am making this decision every day. I can make this decision with almost every action that I take. I'm making the decision to let God run the show and not me. I'm making the decision to carry out God's will rather than my own, right? I have that decision to make constantly throughout my day, so this prayer rings true throughout my day, right? I'm offering myself to God to do with me as he sees fit, right? As my higher power sees fit with me, I'm not in charge anymore. Because what I see fit always makes me miserable. And it typically makes the people around me miserable too, right? I don't know what's good for myself, but God does.
What page number was that?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Page 63. So, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action. And I highlight this and I underline this because it says the word launched, right? Next, we launch. We do this third step prayer where we have this humbling experience. Sometimes an effect is felt at once, right? Because for the first time in my life, I decided that somebody else could take charge. Somebody else could run the show. Somebody who wasn't me, right? Because me mismanaging and controlling my life got me right to where I was at my lowest of bottoms before I came into these rooms, right? So it's now my turn to let go and see what God has to offer for me. So next, we launch. We don't wait, right? I don't hang around and see what happens because sometimes it says in the line right before that at the bottom of 63, this was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect sometimes a very great one was felt at once, right? I've had a couple different third step experiences. Sometimes I was like, cool, what's next? Sometimes I felt this electric feeling, right? But it's very easy for me as an alcoholic to feel my first good feeling, to feel some kind of hope from this process and to say, wow, that was great, and then kind of just stop doing it, right? Because I get this idea that something is working for me and I want to find out where I can take control, right? Where I can, you know, have my little part that I get to control, even if it's just something little. I want to control something, right? My ego, my self-will is constantly telling me that I am important and I need to be in charge of something, right? In God's world, I need to be in charge of something. So it says next to be launched, right? Immediately. We go right into the fourth step, right? We made this decision, and now this decision must be followed with action. I said last week, if I make a decision to become a mayor of this town, right? Does that make me any more mayor than I was 2 seconds ago? No, right? It doesn't make a difference, but every action that I take is prefaced with a decision. I have to make a decision before I take action. So we've made the decision, and we must immediately follow it with action. And this brings us to the personal house cleaning, or the fourth step. And going on to page 64, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And I always point out vital and crucial, right? What does vital mean? Necessary for life, right? I need this to live. Not every person in this world who's spiritually sick, who is in need of a spiritual solution, needs this to live. I, as an alcoholic, do, right? I've been given a choice, right? I just made my decision to live a spiritual life or to die an alcoholic death, right? For me to do nothing, The way I always put it is I have to be either moving forward or backwards, right? If I'm not moving forward, down towards the light, towards God's path, whatever, I'm moving backwards. There is no such thing as stagnation for an alcoholic like me, right? So if I'm not making a decision to live a spiritual life, I've by default chose to die an alcoholic death, right? I've seen the miseries and the lows that I've hit, not even by drinking, but just not living a spiritual life, living in untreated alcoholism, have caused me pain equal to, at the very least, what I felt out there drinking and drugging. So for me, this is vital. For me, this is crucial. I need to do these next parts. I need to get free. I need to live this spiritual life. And it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by strenuous effort to face and be rid of these things. Right? 4, 5, 6, and 7 are going to be kind of my topic of today. And these all go hand in hand, right? These all are kind of one big step broken down into four, right? Four smaller steps. In step four is when we actually take our inventory. And I've done a couple four steps in my life, right? I've mentioned before, this isn't my first time in the rooms. This isn't my first time around. And the first few times, even those times, I had a couple different experiences with the four step. Now, the first time I ever did a four step, I honestly didn't get much of an effect from it. And the reason for that was because, and it goes on to talk about later, that, you know, we sometimes hold on to the worst items in stock, right? There were things that I didn't get honest about. There were things that I thought I was too ashamed of, that nobody could ever know, that my sponsor would judge me, that people would know, that I had to take with me to my grave, right? And the way that I was able to justify keeping those things off of my fourth step was I kind of was like, well, we have this resentment and the harms and the fears inventory and, you know, this stuff. It doesn't really fit exactly into any of those columns, right? So I don't have to say it, right? By default, I don't have to say it, right? Later on, it says when we only thought we were humbled, we only thought we had our ego smashed, right? If I'm not getting honest, I thought I was having this experience, but I wasn't, because I found a way to hold on to those worst items in stock. You know, for me, I like to ask my sponsees at the beginning of a fifth step, because this is what I need asked to me, is what was the secret on the way here you decided either didn't fit into the inventory or you just weren't going to tell me you were going to leave off whatever. And we get that out of the way first, because once that's out of the way, the rest is smooth sailing, right? It's the one thing, and it's like you're a mind reader too, because they're like, how did you know I decided not to do that? Because I do it. I do the same thing, right? We're all so similar, but I have this thing in my mind that tells me I am unique, right? That terminal uniqueness. But I need to be rid of all of these things. I need to get free of all of these things. And at this time, I didn't get free of all of these things. So shortly after that, I did 5, 6, and 7. It was all fine and dandy. It felt kind of cool. I made one amends, and then I ended up right back where I started, out with the bottle in my hand. I had another time when I was sober for a longer period of time, and I actually had a real experience with the steps, where I was completely honest on my fourth step. And I remember, to preface, my whole life I lived with anxiety and fear and the bedevilments, right? But particularly this one thing, you know, was that I was always told, you have this anxiety thing, and you need to take this, and you need to take that, and nothing ever worked for me. Nothing ever worked. So I always assumed, since, you know, this is an outside issue, it's going to be with me my entire life. I'm going to get sober. I'm always going to feel like this. It's going to stink, but whatever. I'll find a way to deal with it, right? That's what you guys always promised was going to happen. But after I did this fifth step, and I went through 6 and 7, and I woke up that next morning, and I was not afraid. I wasn't scared. I didn't have my heart racing and beating in my throat before I even opened my eyes, because that was what it was like to wake up in the morning. I could feel my heart in my throat before my eyes even opened. I woke up afraid. I woke up scared to face the world, right? So if any hard decision came up, it was hard enough for me to get out of bed and live life normally than to actually make any decisions. But all of a sudden, I started experiencing this freedom, right? I wasn't afraid anymore. I wasn't obsessing over alcohol and drugs anymore, right? I felt okay. I felt okay in my own skin. This was the first kind of real breakthrough where I said, whoa, maybe this could work for me. You know, I had another experience later on during the same time sober where, you know, I held on to some character defects. They started coming back up, and I did this more detailed kind of four step, I guess, on just 5 people. And I had my first, like, real white light experience, right, where I was sitting, and I did it with a friend of mine who showed me how to do this different fourth step, and we're sitting in the church, and I'm doing my meditation, and all of a sudden I just feel this warm comfort all over my entire body, and just this total relaxation, like relaxation I'd never felt before. And my eyes were closed, and it just felt like the sun was like shining through my eyes, but I wasn't, the sun wasn't there, right? I'm indoors. And I was thinking to myself, like, what is this? And I just suddenly knew that it was forgiveness. It was just this complete clarity where I knew exactly what was going on. And when people would ask me, you know, how I have faith in a power greater than myself, it's because of stuff like that, that I saw. That was, that's, for me, that's undeniable, right? And I don't expect anybody else to feel that feeling that I have until they experience it themselves, right? Until they see their higher power take from them what they could never, ever get rid of. I don't expect somebody to understand that, but at the same time, like, people told me this is what happened, and it did, right? And I'm not saying that all experiences, I mean, there's a whole disclaimer in the book that, you know, not everybody has the flash of light, and the, you know, and that wasn't always my experience either, but this one time, that was my experience. And it was just this earth-shattering moment for me, and it was right after I got free of these defects of character. And the way that I look at it is all the things that I'm looking for in the fourth step, these defects of character, are the things that I've just stuffed down inside my entire life, especially if it's, you know, my first time coming in here. I never done a four step before. I never done any house cleaning before. I've stuffed them down my entire life, and each one of those things I'm just putting on top of that connection to my higher power, right? I look at it as like this portal in my chest, you know, right? And I'm just stuffing things on top of it, harms and fears and anger and resentment and self-pity and selfishness, and all of these things are just dirtying up that connection inside of me, right? And blocking me from it. And all of a sudden, to just let go of all of them and have them removed, you know, root and branch, is just this indescribable feeling of freedom. It's like a weight lifted off of my shoulders, right? And I'd love to say that this was that time that I stayed sober and I've been sober ever since, but I didn't, right? Because the thing about these defects of character is that if I don't keep working on them, they come back, right? I'm not permanently free of them, but I get to get free of them. I can do this more than once. We have, which we'll get to later, steps 10 and 11 for this kind of thing, or step 10 for this kind of thing. But I wanted to get back to specifically resentments that I wanted to go over. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. The first three chapters, four if you include the doctor's opinion, talk about the physical and the mental aspect of this disease. And in We Agnostics, we cover the spiritual aspect of this disease. Right here, it's telling me that when I straighten out spiritually, the mental and physical come along with it, right? When I treat this God-shaped hole inside me, right, this spiritual malady, all of the rest falls into place. I'm when I'm trying to, you know, hold down and not drink, you know, I'm just treating the symptoms. I'm not treating the disease itself, right? And when I put the drink down, the drink was my solution. It wasn't my problem. The problem is my thinking and this God-shaped hole in my heart that I've been desperately trying to fill with whatever comes my way. And when I put the drink down, I don't fill that hole with anything. I will look for anything and everything to put in there. It doesn't matter what it is. If it makes me feel even remotely good, remotely okay, I'm going for it. I'm going for it hard. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. My ability to hold a grudge kills me more than anything else, right? Because I get to these points where I hate someone or something so much that I want to hate them now. I don't even want to get free of it. And in the sixth and seventh step, they ask us to look through our inventory and say, am I willing to let go of this, right? Am I willing to let go of this? And the amazing, cool thing about this book is that if I'm not willing, I get to ask to be willing, right? It's ready for my imperfections and my human condition of not being willing to let go of these things. I can ask God for the willingness. How cool is that? Because I'm not always willing, Right? I'm not always willing to let go of these things. When I hate someone, I want to hate them. I want to hate you. I want to burn up and feel anger because that'll show you for making me angry for whatever reason. Right? That'll show you now I'm mad at you forever, for life. And what I'm really doing is drinking poison and hoping you die. Right? I'm making myself miserable and I'm suffering. And you're off in Disney World with your friends and family doing God knows what, not thinking about me. Right? I'm the one suffering. When going through this, nothing counts but thoroughness and honesty, right? I learned this my first time around doing this, first fourth step. If I'm not thorough and I'm not honest and I'm not touching on everything that's in there, well, it's not going to work, right? I'm only going to think that I got freed. And it's not that, and I always tell people this too, is that if I forget something, I'm not going to, you know, go and drink, right? If I forget something and I'm willing to get honest, then I pick up the phone and I go and get honest. It's as simple as that. Right? But it's that thing that I try to make it so it doesn't fit or it doesn't work or I don't need to put that on there. It's that thing. That thing is the only thing stopping me from this wonderful spiritual life, living happy, joyous, and free. That one thing that I think everyone is going to judge me for and my sponsor will, you know, think less of me and whatever. That thing is the thing keeping me sick. And is anything really worth that? You know? I'm going ahead now to page 71. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. So, if you've made this third step decision, if you've made this fourth step inventory, then we're ready to go into the next step. Right? There's a lot to cover in the fourth step and in how to do the different inventories, and I felt it would be better to just kind of move past that and go into the 5, 6, and 7 because I only have one more week after this and I want to try to cover it as much as I can. But at this point, you know, it's, we hope you are convinced, right? At this point, I need to be convinced, right, that if I can let go of these things, maybe God can take them from me, right? I've made a good beginning. Right? At the end of the fourth step, I've had times where I've had guys that I've talked to specifically where at the end of the fourth step, they were like, it felt so good to write all that stuff down. And then they just checked out, right? They checked out right before the best part. The best part about writing inventory is I get to get free of it, right? It's almost gotten to the point in my life now where if it's my fault, I'm excited, right? Because I can get free of that. You know, if I did you wrong, I can get free of that. I can call you up. I can make amends. I can write inventory. I can go help somebody else. And I can get free of that. Right? So I look forward to it being my fault. And it makes me, it bums me out when people check out right before that part. Because if you thought the fourth step felt good, which is not everybody's opinion for sure, then just wait until you actually get free of the stuff. Going on to the next page, 72. Into action. This is kind of like the first, and I always look at the fourth step like this too, when we're finally getting into action. We're starting to really do things. We're starting to get honest. We're starting to get free of these things. This is when things, for a lot of us, for me, started to get scary, right? Because in the very beginning, it was the stupidest little things that I did not want to get honest about, that I wanted to take to my grave. And a lot of these things, and somebody speaking here earlier said this too, it's like, I am willing to tell pretty much anybody these things now, but it doesn't mean that I should. So I'm not going to sit up here and tell you all the things on my fourth step that maybe wouldn't be the best thing to say from the podium. But I can say that today I'm not ashamed of those things anymore. They make for funny stories, right? They make for a good opportunity to relate with the newcomer who thinks he is the only one who's ever done that. Right? I have this terminal uniqueness, once again, that tells me you are the only one who's ever done that, who's ever been sick enough or dumb enough or whatever to do something like that. And then when you get honest about it, you find out that literally every other person in here has done something exactly like that. Right? But I think I'm so special. I think I'm so unique. My ego tells me, like, you can never tell anyone. And the things that I do in order to cover up that thing I can't tell anyone are usually worse than the thing that I'm covering up to begin with. I cause more damage and more pain trying to make it go away. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. So right here, I broke it down in my book We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. This is our goal right there. This is what we're looking. This is what we're shooting for, right? After that, we have admitted certain defects, ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is, put our finger on the weak items. This is what we've done. This is what we've done already at this point in the book. And now these are about to be cast out. This is the next step we're about to take. And we're going into step five now, where we sit down and I'm nervous and trembling and I think I'm about to get judged. And this requires action, right? Into action is the name of this chapter. This is when we start getting up, doing things, right? If we want to look at it as, you know, this is when we get up out of bed and get onto the couch and we start talking with our sponsor, right? We start getting honest about the things that we were holding on to. When completed, this will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This is the fifth step. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. If you are finding yourself saying, well, isn't admitting it to God and myself enough? You and every other person in this room has thought that before. I don't mean to speak for you guys, but everyone I've ever talked to has thought that before. And in my experience, no. No, for me, it wasn't enough, right? It was not enough to admit to myself and God, right? Because it's really easy to just sit there in a room and, you know, be like, oh, I did this, sorry, whatever, and then get it off, right? But that's not humbling me. Right? That's not getting honest. That's not getting free of these things because I'm still afraid to ever utter that word around another person. Right? I need to get honest with another person. It doesn't mean I have to tell the whole world, but for me, it just doesn't work to sit in a room alone and talk with God and get honest about these things. Right? I got to get honest with another person. It's a humbling experience, and in my experience, the things that humble me are the things that work best for me. Right? The things that I get really uncomfortable about and I think, oh, I really shouldn't do this, are the things in AA, at least, that are good for me. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking, right? If I don't humble myself and get free of these things, it's as simple as that. I might not stop drinking, right? I'm not going to have this experience with God. I'm not going to have this earth-shattering freedom. Every single person that I've talked to has always told me after their fifth step, the one thing that's always in common is it feels like there was a weight lifted off my shoulders, right? And it's almost because I literally have the weight of 1,000 resentments weighing me down, hunching me over, making me miserable. I'm dragging it along with me, and I get to get free of these things. And when I don't get honest with another person, I'm robbing myself of these experiences. Every single thing in this book that I choose not to do, I'm only robbing myself of that experience at the end of the day, right? I'm not hurting my sponsor. My sponsor is going to stay sober because he did intensive work with another alcoholic, right? I'm getting hurt. I'm getting hurt by not doing these things. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. And like it says earlier in our book, easier, softer ways don't work for me, right? The easier, softer way. At the end of the day, this ends up being the easier, softer way. But the easier, softer way in my head has never, ever worked for me, right? The idea that I think of that seems easier, that seems more comfortable, right? For me, I'm comfortable suffering, right? When I suffer for long enough and I exist in suffering, I get comfortable suffering. It feels so much easier to just sit at home and be miserable than to go out and do something about it, right? And I'll tell myself over and over, no, this is the better decision because it's more comfortable. I feel better doing this. But the truth is, I'm just comfortable being in pain. I'm comfortable doing the things that make me suffer because it's my idea. It's comfortable. It's in my head. You know, I thought of it. It makes me feel good. But the truth is that at the end of the day, when I put my head on the pillow, I do not feel better about sitting at home and watching TV rather than going out to speak or going to a meeting or doing whatever. I don't feel better about that at the end of the day. And that's after doing this for a while, I'm able to see why I don't feel better. But in the beginning, I had no idea why I didn't feel better. I just felt like, you know, maybe I didn't exert my will properly and I have to do it differently next time, but I still can go with doing it my way, you know? Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story, right? You know, I personally have done my fourth step in the form of inventory and columns, as it says in the book, but I've heard of people, you know, telling their whole life story during their fifth step, right? As long as I'm willing to get rid of all these things, right? As long as I'm not hiding anything. You know, I personally, during my fourth step, was so scared that I was going to forget something, except for the stuff I intentionally left off, but I was so scared that I was going to forget something that I literally wrote down every person I had ever been mad at in my entire life. I wrote down, you know, the person who stepped on my toe in kindergarten and stuff, and it wasn't even people I was still mad at. It was just if I ever felt anger towards them, I wrote them down. So my fourth step was like pages and pages and pages long in this notebook. I still have it somewhere, right? Because I was so afraid of this happening, yet it happened anyway because of my ego, because of that thing that, oh, that doesn't fit, right? That it doesn't fit in the inventory did me the most harm, right? And when it came to the fifth step, it even popped into my head, too, because God always has a way of reminding me when I'm doing something wrong, even if I'm fully convinced myself it's the right thing to do. It popped into my head like, maybe I should work that in there. The way they worded all this sounds like I should find a way to work that in there, but, and then I left it off, right? And I only thought I'd humbled myself, only thought I had lost my egoism, right? And at the end of the day, I still was suffering from the obsession, right? And it ended with me picking up a drink and picking up a drug again, right? And I ended up out there for 2 more years. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside of himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Right? I take these things and I shove them down. I shove them down on top of this connection that I'm trying to get a hold of, right? And all these things cause for more drinking, right? These defects of character cause for more drinking. I'm making myself miserable. They are the root of most of my suffering, right? These things are all blocking me from God. And to this day, right, and this is why, you know, I referenced the 10th step too, is because to this day, I still have these defects of characters that come up. And if I miss them or I don't do my 10th step or I miss it and whatever, and the whole day goes by, I have resentments from morning until evening that if they don't get inventoried by the end of the day, I'm suffering again. I feel blocked from God. I get this like feeling that like, you know, God's not listening or this isn't that and I need to manage this and I need to control this. And I find myself complaining to people that, you know, I can't seem to manage this. And I hear myself say it, you know, I can't seem to manage. Well, why am I managing it, right? Why am I the one in charge, right? These things, they build back up, and we have the opportunity to get free of them over and over again. But I have to be willing to get honest. Honesty is the key here, right? I have to be willing to get honest. Well, willingness is the key, and that's the name of the workshop, but honesty. So, going to page 75. This is the thing that I read with my sponsees as we're going to do our fifth step. The second full paragraph on 75. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past, right? Every single one, right? In order to truly get free of these things, I have to own them, right? I cannot get rid of the darkness without first illuminating it, right? I need to dive into these things and fully embrace them so that I can let go of them and get free of them. If I'm not willing to do that, they're going to stay there, right? And would I rather feel embarrassed while I say it and get totally free of it or live with it for the rest of my life, killing me? Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. And these are the fifth step promises right here. And for me, and I say this almost every time, we can look the world in the eye. I can literally look the world in the eye. I did not look the world in the eye. I didn't look you or you or you. I didn't look anybody in the eye. I looked around people when I talked to them, and I just thought it was some weird quirk of mine because I thought it made me feel uncomfortable. I could feel you looking at me. I could feel you seeing me and knowing what's going on and how miserable and uncomfortable I am. And I couldn't deal with that. And it just came in the thought of just no, you know? So I'd look around, I'd look at the floor. If I shared at a meeting, God forbid, I never ever wanted to do that. But if I did, I looked at the floor the entire time. I was like, you know, my name's Peter, whatever. And I'd mumble because I just couldn't do it. I couldn't look anybody in the face because God forbid you see what's really behind these eyes, right? That was my biggest fear. And the fifth step gave me that, right? I can look the world in the eye today, right? I can look around the room, you know, and I can give people the respect they deserve by looking them in the eye. When I make an amends to somebody, right, I can look them in the eye and say that I'm sorry and say that I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to get it right. I can, there's the power of looking people in the eyes. It means something. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. I've never once in my life before this been alone at perfect peace and ease. I didn't think that was possible. I thought that was made up. Nobody felt that way. That people had to have, you know, the radio blasting in the car because, God forbid, I hear what's going on in my head. Right? I thought people had to, you know, have earphones in all the time. You had to be talking all the time. You'd have to literally watch TV or play video games until you pass out because you just can't stand what's going on up here. Right? When you guys told me I had to meditate, I was like, sitting alone quietly? Are you nuts? Why would I ever do that? You know? And now I can do that today. And maybe that's why they put prayer meditation in the 10th step, because I wasn't able to meditate until past this 5th step, right? Until this point where I could sit alone at perfect peace and ease, right? It was amazing to be able to lie in bed and just go to sleep. That was insane. I always thought there was something wrong with me. I could never just sleep. I'd toss and turn and do this and get up and go do that. And I just fell asleep. Right? Because my thoughts weren't roaring in my ear telling me how horrible I was or how ashamed of this thing I should be or whatever. You know, it was total quiet, peace and ease. Our fears fall from us, right? I talked about my anxiety. And not to say that there aren't outside issues, because of course there are. For me, I had my whole life where I was given this for anxiety or that for anxiety, and you have this disorder and you have that disorder, and I did this, I took this step, and I unloaded all of this crap that was built up inside of me, and all of a sudden those fears just fell from me, right? I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of everything, and I thought I was afraid of nothing. I thought the only way I could be feeling this way is because I have some sort of disorder. There's something wrong with me. No, I didn't have a disorder. I was just terrified. I had the disease of alcoholism, and I was terrified of everything and everyone. I was afraid of what you were all thinking of me, of how I looked to you, of how I looked to me, of how I thought of myself. I was afraid of absolutely everything. And to just get honest about these things and dig to the root of these fears and be willing to let go of them. And by the time I did this, I was like, heck yeah, I'm willing to let go of these things. Of course I am. I want to get rid of this. Right? I want to get free of these things. I don't want them anymore. Please take them. You know, we began to feel the nearness of our Creator. You know, I had these experiences that I talked about earlier in previous times in sobriety, and I did feel the nearness of my Creator. I had this experience where I felt like this is God, God is here, right? But at the same time, I have the ability to push God away. God will never turn his back on me, right? I turn my back on God, and every time I turn back around, God is like, to anybody who has a pet, like a dog or something, you know, I heard a speaker say this once. God is like your dog when you go away for vacation. You turn your back on God and you know, you're ashamed and you feel terrible. And you come home and what is that dog doing? It's jumping and yipping and licking your face because it's just so happy you're back. It's not mad that you were gone, right? God is the same way. God isn't mad that I was gone or upset that I was gone. He's happy that I'm back. Right? That's always been my experience with this. And I did feel the nearness of my Creator after this 5th step. And I would say each time, besides the time I left stuff off, I felt this experience, but later on in sobriety, I turned my back. Right? I turned my back on God. I said, God, you're doing a great job over here, but I got this. Let me see how I can take it from here. Right? That delusion came back that said, maybe now that things are good, now I can drive the boat. Now I can do this. And it didn't work for me, clearly. It didn't work for me, but that doesn't take away from the fact that I still had that experience. I just robbed myself of it, right? I always have that ability. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. And I would say this time around, I specifically had this experience because those last few times, especially when I was sober last time around, I believed that the steps worked. I believed that this was a thing. I actually believed this was the only way, and if you didn't do it my way, that you were a complete fool. I had this, like, spiritual arrogance where my idea of helping somebody was to go to a meeting and make as many people mad as I could, you know? That was what I thought was the right thing to do, because if you think that you don't drink, go to meetings will work, then you're an idiot, and I don't want anything to do with you, and blah, blah, blah. And it was horrible, and why would anybody want to come to me for help, right? I couldn't see that, but clearly the newcomers in the room could. And, I completely separated God from the whole equation, right? I didn't consider that maybe God has a reason for each type of person that comes into this room. That those meetings that maybe don't have the solution that I need and I crave are in existence for somebody who does need what they have, right? Might not be me, but there's somebody, right? That God has a purpose for everybody, but I completely removed God from this process, right? And just made it about the words on the wall. If I take this action, then this, and if I take this action, then that, and whatever, and well, I don't need to do this because I know this already, and I knew this, and I just had this arrogance, and it was all about me, right? I completely forgot about the whole spiritual aspect of it. And I thought God was just a part of the steps, rather than God being the steps, if that makes sense. Right, the whole point of this process is to get me this spiritual experience, is to get me this experience, to get me in contact with this power, and this power is my defense against alcohol, is my defense against my alcoholism, right? That's what this power does for me, right? It's not that this is a part of it, it's the whole thing. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly, and for me, this has happened every single time I've done a fifth step. The last time, this time around, when I came in, since I had had an experience with the steps before, I was certain, 1,000%, that there is no way this is going to work for me, because I did it already. I did it already, and it didn't work. I saw it happen. I had the experience. It was all fine and dandy until it wasn't anymore. Right? And I came in here thinking I was crazier than all of you. I called up my sponsor and I told him there's voices in my head telling me to drink and telling me to get high, and I can't make them go away. Right? I was miserable. I was losing my mind, and I thought there is not a word in this book that can make that go away. Right? Until it started to make it go away. It started to make it go away. When I did this fifth step, I said, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. I had this once before, and I wasted it, and I threw it away, and it's not coming back. But it came back. Because just like that dog at the door, right? God was just waiting for me to turn back around. God is always just waiting for me to turn back around. And the entire time, it was just me turning my back. And as soon as I was willing to come back, there he was. Right? There he was. And I have this experience again. And once again, the feeling of the drink problem began to disappear. Right? The obsession began to get lifted from me. Right, I started to feel that freedom again, and I thought I would never, ever get that again. I really did. There's something about my brain that thinks I'm so unique that once I make a mistake and once I turn my back, I'm done. It's over. I have no more chances. And it's a lie that I tell myself. Right? As long as I'm alive, as long as I'm breathing, right, I can give this another go. Right? As long as that I'm here today, my butt is in this chair, I can give this another go. I can take that action. I have that power. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, right? That God is holding my hand and guiding me through this thing, right? That no matter where he takes me, I can still experience that freedom, right? I know that I'm going to be okay. Even if it gets dark, even if it gets scary, there's this prayer that I say every morning that, for some reason, I can't remember the exact line, but I have it on my phone. That's, give me 1 second and I'll find it. Oh, perfect. It was already open. Therefore, I will trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death, I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. Right? Even if I think I'm on death's door, even if I'm living in the shadow of death, I will not fear. Because no matter what, God has taken me where he's taken me for a reason, and I will be okay. Right? I can have that trust and faith in God. And sometimes, no, loads of times, all the time, pretty much every day for me, I doubt in God. I doubt in God, and I say that this is not where I'm supposed to be. You messed up, or I messed up. Typically, that's my new thing. I messed up. God, I know God was mad. I messed up, right? I feel bad. I ruined it all, whatever, but I should not fear, right? God is guiding me. God knows what he's doing, right? This is right in front of me. The spiritual toolkit is at my feet, right? There's no need to fear. God isn't making mistakes, And that's how I've come to learn it. And I've gotten through some of the most painful things that I've experienced in my life happened to me in sobriety. Not because of sobriety, but just because of life. And God got me through them in ways that I could never, ever, ever have dealt with before or after I picked up my first drink, ever. Right? Rather than running for the hills and hiding, I discovered that if you trust God and you feel your feelings, they end. That's amazing. I thought when you got hurt, you were hurt for life, because that was my experience with it. When I felt a bad emotion, I ran for the hills, and of course I stuffed it down as deep as I could, and it would come back up whenever it felt like, because that's how that would work. So that was my life. That was how I felt everything, until I realized that when you trust God and you feel these things, you grow stronger, and they end. Pain ends. There cannot be darkness without light. There cannot be joy without pain, right? It's yin and yang. They're both one. They're both part of the same thing. And I can't have one without the other. And I can't just go running for the hills, because it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away. It doesn't work for me. If it did work for me, I'd still be out there running. And I assume most people would be out there running with me. After this, it says, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. And it is something to be thankful and grateful for. Because I get to know God better, right? This is that kind of like face-to-face experience. For me, each fifth step that I've done has been like that face-to-face experience where I suddenly realize all the stuff in my mind that tells me otherwise is just pushed to the side, even if just for a couple moments, and I can see the truth that God is there guiding me and I'm exactly where I need to be. And there is nothing in my experience that feels better than knowing that I'm exactly where I need to be. And everyone and everything on this planet, in this universe, is exactly where it's supposed to be. There's no feeling of peace like that, of living in the present, not in the past or the future, which only exist in my head, you know? Just living here, now. It's just this feeling of just, which is all I ever look for in a drink. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? When I have my guys do this, I have them read through the first five proposals, the first five steps, and ask themselves, did I honestly do this step? Right? Going into, you guys don't have to turn to this if you don't want to, but just going into them, you know, did I admit that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable, right? Do I believe these first pertinent idea, these three pertinent ideas and how it works, that we were alcoholic, could not manage our own life, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, that God could and would if he were sought, right? Do I believe that, right? And if I do, I can move on. Is my work solid so far? Did I leave something off of my fourth step, right? There is always a point of return, too. If I leave something off of my fourth step and I do my fifth step, guess what? I have a cell phone and I can pick up that phone and I can call my sponsor and say, hey, I left this off. Right? I've had people do that before, right? And that is their life and death right there, as they just picked up that phone, right? So it's not over just because I read this part and I'm like, well, did I leave it off? No, I can get honest. I could still get honest, right? Oh, next page. I always lose my place. I've been doing pretty good with it today, though. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. Am I willing to let go? Am I willing to let go of each of these defects of character, right? Step six is that question. Am I willing to let go? And in step seven, I do let go, right? And in step six, like we were talking about before, if I'm not willing to let go, I ask God for the willingness to let go, right? I say, God, please let me be willing to let go of this fear, right? Please grant me the willingness to let go of this resentment. Because there's especially resentments. For me, it's resentments. I hold a grudge. If you made me mad, you deserve my anger. Right? I'm going to burn your skull with my anger, with the raging heat of my fury, and they don't notice. But to me, it's like, whoo, I got you. I got you. You don't know, but I'm seething right now. Right? And am I willing to let go of that? Right? Are we now ready to let God remove from us all things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. What time is it? Perfect. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Right? Step 7 is when I let go. I humbly offer myself to God. Right? I ask him to take each one of my defects of character, good and bad, because at the end of the day, I am not the ultimate judge of what is a good and what is a bad defect of character. Well, defect, but what is a defect and what is not a defect, right? That's God's choice. You know, maybe I have something with me right now that I look at as a difficult thing or a bad thing, but God needs me to have that right now. You know, sometimes I don't consider that. Sometimes, you know, I am frustrated that my ego won't go away and I can't, but maybe God needed me to have that ego in that moment to drive me to do what he needed me to do, right? I'm not the judge and I don't know. All I can do is be willing to let go of all of it, right? All of it. My favorite quality about myself, be willing to let go of it, right? And let God do with it as he sees fit, because the things that I need, God will leave me with, and the things that I don't, he will take. It's my job to let go of all of it, right? Every single one. And when I'm beaten into this sense of reasonableness, this gift of desperation has been given to me, and that is thanks to alcohol, thanks to drugs, that did that for me, beat me into that sense of reasonableness, right? Then I'm willing to let go of these things, right? I ask God for the willingness if it's not there, but I get willing to let go of all of it. And that's what this prayer says. And this is another one that I try to say every day because, once again, I have this I'm suffering from this human condition, right? I have this condition. I want to hold on to these things. I am imperfect, right? And I'm going to be imperfect every day, right? That's why I've got to keep learning and keep doing this work. And that's the beauty of it, right? I don't want to be perfect because then my mind closes and I have nothing left to learn. And in my experience, when I do that, I suffer. So I say this every day. I make sure that I'm trying to let go of these things every day, right? Let God take them from me every day because I get frustrated because I'm stuck with this ego and it's annoying me, but maybe God needs me to have that. So when I'm afraid, when I'm going through something and I'm full of fear and anger and I've been praying on it and doing all this stuff and it won't go away, I say, God, please help me use this fear or use this whatever to better do thy will. Right? Help me use this to serve you. Maybe you need me to have this. I don't know. I'm not the judge here. You are. But guide me and show me what I can do this. And you'd be surprised. My mind has been blown when I've done that. And I started my day and asked God to help me use my fear for good. How suddenly I found a newcomer who was suffering more than I was and knew exactly how I felt. And I was able to sit down and better identify with him. Or go speak at a rehab and better identify with those guys because I was suffering. Right? Maybe I needed to suffer in that moment. Not everything is going to be good for me. I grow from suffering. Pain is growth for me, right? Growing can be uncomfortable, but I need to do it, right? I know what happens when I don't do it. I had years and years experiencing it out there, you know? Step 7 is letting go, you know? Next week, I'll come back and do 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, I'm happy that I got through all of these, and thank you for letting me share. All right.